Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our set of position group reviews today, looking at the edge defenders. Joining me to do that is Jake Vogel. Jake, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Ken. How about you, yourself?
And no issues here other than the fact the Ravens aren't alive anymore. That's kind of sucking. But yeah. We should be not only waiting for an MVP vote on Thursday, which, by the way, looks like Polymarket is a complete toss-up again now. So I don't know what they've learned. Or what whoever has learned, the wagerers have learned, that puts it back to a 50-50 proposition. But that's where it sits right now. And as we record this, that's on the night of February 1st. But anyway, we'll find out for one way or another on this Friday, I think it is, right? When they announce the awards. Yeah. That's Thursday, yep. Actually. I think it's Thursday, the 6th. But anyway, appreciate you coming on to talk Edge. I think we've seen the last few years, one of the kind of the thing common threads has been the Ravens' ability to get bargain bin talent at the position.
Completely. I mean, you look at Jadeveon Clowney and obviously Kyle Van Noy in 2023. Both of those guys were relatively inexpensive. And what the Ravens were able to get out of them from a production standpoint, and then Van Noy kind of taking it up another notch in 2024, at least in his sack production, has been pretty spectacular. I think a lot of Ravens fans should be pretty pleased with what Eric DaCosta has been able to do with the defense, especially at that position, and the allocation of funds. Definitely seems like you're getting a really good ROI, your return on investment for the draft picks. And then on top of that, the cap space dollars that you're using in the free agency pool.
Yeah, but both extremely good. Dafe Owe will be playing on the fifth year tender this year, the fifth year option, which is high, but it is what it is. And this is kind of the last chance to re-sign him. So the Ravens are dealing with a group that is pretty thin to start with and has some players who won't be here beyond the end of 2025 in Owe and Van Noy that really provide a significant portion of that pass rush juice. They've had a lot of success. The bargain bin is a lot deeper, than what we've just alluded to here so far. I mean, Justin Houston was in that group, and JPP was a guy that got some value of. They brought in Yannick Ngakoue for a little bit of time. He provided a little bit of value in a few snaps this year. They've been exceptionally good at that part. But I'm concerned about the thinness of the group overall.
For sure. I think, going into the draft season and free agency prior to that, and then also after the draft, it's going to be really critical for DaCosta to add some talent at the edge position. Hopefully some youth there, because Owe is going into year five. Van Noy is an aging player, but producing at a high level. And you don't have much behind those two guys. We'll get into some of the contributions and hopefully some positive things to look forward to in the future. But right now we're really just talking about those two guys as being the leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. Now they have what youth they have has kind of let them down so far in terms of their position on the track. And we'll talk a little bit about that. During the stretch run, one of the characteristics that they had was that they really preserved pass rush snaps for the big two. They wanted to keep those two very well rested. And whereas they'd had three guys rotating to two spots, and Justin Houston being another guy they got from the bargain bin, but at great value, was a guy who played a lot of snaps, and Owe did, and others did as well in years when they were thin. This year, they really tried a little bit different strategy where Tavius Robinson took a big chunk of the snaps, and they put Harrison on the other side of the defensive line with him as effectively a Sam linebacker who is pretty much a rush defender on early downs.
Yeah, completely agree with that. And honestly, it makes sense what they did, trying to preserve their best pass rushers for those critical downs and keep those guys fresh. And, I think we've seen in previous years how Malik Harrison is a pretty solid player setting the edge, and Tavius Robinson has more of that profile. He hasn't necessarily graded out super well in that area, but I think he's probably better than some of the PFF grades you see in relation to run defense, and I think he has some upside.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We can certainly talk about that a little bit when we get to Tavius specifically. One of the big things I want to talk about was how few rush nickel and race car packages this used. Now, that's been a hallmark of particularly the Martindale defense, that they used a lot of outside linebackers kicked inside. Guys like Jahad Ward.
McPhee.
Yeah, another good one who did it all the time. Were kicked in a lot. So were some other players on an odd basis. They still do a little bit of that now and line up their interior defenders on the outside. But when they do that, you know something's coming. It's not just a one-on-one rep against an edge, against an offensive tackle. Usually, it's usually to create a blitz or some sort of a stunt that they're running. There's so some game involved when they do it. This year, they only used 2.03 outside linebackers per play. Now, if you think about it, almost all standard formations have two outside linebackers in them. So they basically did not deviate from that. They had a few uncovered snaps, but it's just a handful. And they had a few other times where guys were kicked inside, but it's not many either. Mm-hmm. And works out to only 2.03 outside linebackers play, which was a striking number, I thought, in researching this.
Yeah, I think a big reason for that is obviously the lack of talented depth at the position, and then also the talent that you have from the interior players, especially Justin Madubuike as a guy that they like to kick out, and they showed his ability to do that this year. He was not nearly as productive in terms of sacks in 2024, but they like to get him out on the edge and get some matchups versus some tackles. And I think what it does is create some opportunities inside the B gap and the A gap at times for stunts and blitzes here and there.
He's a fast and very violent player. So anytime you can create that and force the player to fan out against him, you have some things. If he crashes down, he creates additional problems. He's been a good under guy, been a good looper, both cases. But the guy who I think really drives the Ravens pass rush right now is his running mate, Travis Jones, mm-hmm. who commands a double team every time he's on the field. It's basically, he's a, I dare you not to double team me kind of guy, like Haloti Ngata was. And the time where was injured for about 3 weeks, that wasn't out. He continued to play and continued to play way too much, honestly, in my opinion. They were very, very thin at the position, but they managed to just basically scrape by that time. It wasn't when they were most productive as a pass rush overall. When he was in there, he almost always is paired with Justin Madubuike on the field at the same time. You can literally copy their snaps down in our spreadsheet of participation by play, and there's only a few adjustments that you need to make. Beyond that, those two are an unbelievably good pair. And you can see how up from the sidelines, players like Pearson and Urban become very good friends, because they obviously become running mates as well in a similar way. Or Pearson Washington. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Travis Jones was, an absolute animal at times this year. And I'm excited to see what he does next year. Hopefully a healthier season for him, but he can wreak some havoc. Doesn't necessarily seem like a player that's going to ever reach that Justin Madubuike 2023 level of sack production. I just don't think it's there for him, but his disruption is probably greater than what Madubuike has created in some senses.
You'd have to have two Travis Joneses to get that, what you're talking about. And if they all of a sudden got Aaron Donald, I think you'd find that Travis Jones became a six sack or seven sack per year guy, mm-hmm. Just from that. And he may become that anyway, but the only guy who was ever really able to command double teams just about every time and still beat them enough for a decent sack total was McPhee. McPhee in his early years was an unbelievable player. Really, that 2014 pass rush in particular, he led it a similar way.
Oh, yeah.
All right. First 10 weeks of the season, the pass rush provided some pressure, The coverage group, though, dramatically underperformed on the opportunity set. So sacks were still looking pretty good. There was a decent amount of pressure created by the line, but the back end was not holding up to it at all. And they made the changes at safety. It was essentially like flipping old light switch in week 11. And all of a sudden, the defense was playing at a much higher level. The Ravens held opponents well under their aggregate opportunity set in terms of expected yards. And, you know, not coincidentally, of course, that's when those changes occurred. The pass rush, honestly, relative to what the back end was providing, the entire coverage unit was providing, had a very level year. They had a very, you know, kind of a even keeled, pretty good pass rush all the way through. It led to a good number of sacks, second in the entire NFL. I know there's a lot of people still out there complaining about that, by the way. What do you think of that? The people who complain about the Ravens need, you know, four more edge rushers because what they have now is not enough, you know, to generate any meaningful sacks. They never get an important sack.
Yeah, I mean, clearly they were doing a good job at creating sacks. You know, when you're second out of all, you know, 32 teams, that's pretty darn good. You can't expect much more than that. But I think if you are going to criticize this defense, there's plenty of places to go first. And I would, you know, go more into disruption in some cases and turnovers, whether that is the secondary not having the stickiest of hands, you know, with missed interception opportunities or just some, you know, schematic things. It's really kind of hard to, you know, put your, like pin it down necessarily what the complete issues were with the defense not creating those turnovers. But that was really the bigger issue in 2024. Their sack production was good. It was steady, like you talked about, not necessarily these huge blips. There were a couple because you have to have those to be second in the NFL, but they were very consistent, I would say.
Yeah. The other thing I would say is that they never really dialed up the pressure to a Martindale kind of level where they were blitzing a super high amount. There's one exception the entire year, the two Giants rookie quarterbacks. They went after him like crazy and they generated some sacks and a lot of pressure. And the Giants had a ball out quick kind of day that day that really held down their offense a lot, which was good. But they didn't do that against a lot of other teams. They did get some meaningful sacks though. And if I look back at one of the most meaningful sacks of the season coming against the Bengals, when they had tied the game at 38 and gave the ball back to the Bengals with a minute and a half or something left. And Madubuike streaked in on first down and got a sack minus seven. Then they got an incomplete, and all of a sudden they're in their own end, and the Bengals had to play three down football, ended up punting the ball, and the Ravens were able to win the game in overtime eventually. But a lot more twists and turns down the road, but that sack was enormous in terms of that particular game. We had big sacks from Van Noy as well. I'm not down on the team and their edge, and oh my god am I happy they didn't go out and trade the farm to try and pick up the Max Crosby at midseason.
I would agree with that. They clearly did enough. I don't think the edge position was the reason that they didn't beat the Bills in the playoff game. Certainly, you know, there are a few players in the NFL that can make a difference. You know, you talk about PFF WAR, wins above replacement. Yeah, there's probably some of those guys that make a serious impact against Buffalo, but the Ravens were in that game, and that game definitely just came down to turnovers. The bigger thing to point at is the Ravens' inability to play clean on offense in the playoffs consistently. And then also the Ravens' inability on defense to force turnovers in the playoffs. Right. And this is all under the Lamar Jackson era of football in Baltimore. That, you know, that's not his fault, but for whatever reason, the defense hasn't done their job necessarily of creating those negative plays. They played well in, you know, forced punts. They forced some turnover on downs. That's all good, but you have to play a clean game on offense, and ideally you force fumbles and there were plenty of fumbles. And then you can also, you know, create interceptions as well.
Right. And that they got to some balls this year and they didn't catch them. Wiggins, Washington both had bad years for catching the football, even though they eventually got on the board. Hamilton had a very big missed drop in the game. The first game against Pittsburgh, right? That cost them the game. That was a drop on third and something or other, or second and something or other. Anyway, obviously lots of lost opportunities. But let's get back to the pass rush here. Very much a pass rush that has contributions from various levels of the defense. They got a lot from slot corner again this year. That was kind of a hallmark of the McDonald era, getting seven sacks from slot corner in 2023. They continued with some of that. Arthur Millette wasn't around, but didn't matter. The scheme was around, and they had Hamilton get a sack or two. They had Humphrey contributing a fair amount of pressure. Not the big gaudy sack total, but he definitely had an impact there.
Yep, I completely agree with that.
See Dean Pease's fingerprints all over this in terms of the being conservative otherwise about the numbers of rushers and the even some of the scheme, which seemed to be reduced to me in aggregate. There were some games they did a little more, like I mentioned, the Giants, but generally speaking, didn't blitz a ton, didn't really stunt a ton, and didn't probably use as much simulated pressure either. So I'd say all elements of deception were down somewhat.
For sure. You saw some bend but don't break defense, especially in that first 10 weeks of the season. You know, there was plenty of breaking as well, but I think the defense really tightened down in the second half of the year, or maybe there was a little bit less than half of the season left. But especially, you know, when they made the safety changes and after that bye as well, you saw the defense really kind of tighten things up.
Yep. Let's talk about some individual players here. How about Kyle Van Noy? Re-signed again with the Ravens after, certainly a very fine year in 2023. Right. And then had a career-high 12.5 sacks in the regular season. I remember somebody asking me, I don't even remember whose show is on, but there was another guest there who's not a Ravens fan, I don't think, said, can the Ravens really expect Kyle Van Noy to get 15 sacks this year? And I go, why would they be expecting Kyle Van Noy to get 15 sacks? You know, he's an older player. If 5-6 sacks, that'll be fine. Well, yeah, turns in a career-high sack total at age 33.
Right. He had a great year. Wild 12.5 sacks. He's never really been that close to it. Last year was his second highest in his career. So I think there is a little bit of a Chuck Smith effect going on here. I think Mike McDonald and the Ravens scheme plays into it. And then also the position or role that he plays on the defense is also helping him in this stage of his career to be a better pass rusher, but definitely impressed, really thoroughly enjoyed watching him on the Ravens this year. And I think he's going to provide some really solid play next year as well. I wouldn't expect the same level of production, but even an eight sack season seems extremely realistic for him. So that's exciting. He had 25 pressures and 41 combo tackles, so that's between solo tackles and assists. In my opinion, these were kind of looking at the games. The week four game against Buffalo was one of his best. Week three against Dallas, 16 versus Pittsburgh, week two versus Vegas, and week 15 against the Giants. And then he had a few games that weren't really strong, like the game in Cincinnati. Was not great for him. And then the game, PFF actually said that week nine against Denver was a pretty strong game for him. I wasn't so sure about that, but because he struggled a little bit in coverage and didn't have any pressure sacks. And
that's a good set of tackles there.
Yeah, but
they ran the ball a lot against the Ravens, so might have had some contributions there. I've actually forgotten the game in a lot of ways, but the Ravens won handily, obviously.
Yeah, they won in a big way. So not much to complain about with him. It was a lot of positive games, not too much negative for him. His PFF grade was 75.8, which ranked 23rd out of 119 eligible players at edge. Run defense grade, 68.4, 36th out of 115. Pass rush was 74.7, tied with Adafe Oe, interestingly enough. I think it was tied. I can verify.
That's okay.
Yeah, it is. Okay. Yeah. 25th out of 109, and coverage grade, ninth out of 24. There just wasn't a lot of sample size for the edge rushers to be included in the group. But yeah, I mean, he did really well. He graded out strongly, and I thought he had a great year.
I had a few things about his year to say, and that they're varying types here. First of all, I think in terms of what characteristics he brings to the field, definitely an outrageous spin move that I still love to see. Yep. He is a very quick and able to loop one or two gaps as needed. I've done a lot of two gap blitzing with him, getting him through the right A gap instead of the A gap is only one gap, but he's, you know, even from a wide nine to go to the A gap, he's comfortable doing that. He's a good finisher, and he provided more first pressures in 24. Now that's really contrasting 23 and 24, but obviously finishing was not a problem in 24 either. But his pressure pyramid is now out of whack, meaning he has a very high percentage of finishes, quarterback hits and sacks relative to pressures. Both of the Ravens' edges are in that position. And unfortunately, that's a big red down arrow for 2025. So you look at that, and they've got to find additional ways to make sure that those kind of finish percentages can continue to be good. And there's only a couple. You can get better interior defenders. You can get better scheme in terms of providing them more opportunities with blitzes and stunts and whatnot. Or you can get potentially more edge defenders that keep them even more rested. Now that could be, I think that would help Van Noy more than it would help Owe at this point, not only because of age, but also because of the fact that he played a fair amount of run snaps this last year. So that's where I'd be anyway on ways you could improve it. But the high percentage of finishes is a legitimate source of concern for both those guys. The guy who had a high percentage of finishes last year, of course, was Matabike, whose pyramid was way out of whack. And now he ended up with, you know, having a pretty decent pressure year, pretty similar pressure year, honestly, a little bit less. But his rate of finishes dropped dramatically, as one would expect, because it was so extreme. And unfortunately, I think that's what we might be looking at both Van Noy and Owe for next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with that. You know, and another thing that really stands out when you're watching Kyle Van Noy is his ability in the screen game. I mean, he's no Terrell Suggs out there, but he definitely has instincts to sniff one of those plays out. And he did that multiple times this year. So really strong player. I do think that his abilities and where Zach Orr is going to ask him to work is going to change next year. I don't see him being a very good Sam linebacker, especially when you're getting into the coverage responsibilities. This year he was about average. I think better than average, but when you're talking about the Baltimore Ravens standard, I think he was more average. And I think just age and athleticism is going to kind of limit that. But his intelligence, football IQ, is there. So I think he can still handle it. And like I mentioned with the screen game, he's going to be over that regardless of his age. So hopefully in 2025, we have some more players to help out in coverage from that position. But I think Van Noy did a very solid job in 2024.
So Van Noy dropped a little bit less than 12% of the time on passing snaps, which is not a whole lot. For an edge guy like that, would certainly someone with a Sam background playing most typically on the side with the tight end there, you'd expect him maybe to be dropping occasionally. Just wasn't really the case. They probably could have used his physicality to wipe out some pick and rub concepts off bunch formations, particularly the way the Chiefs abused him in week one with that. So there were options in terms of what they might have done. Good season from a penalty perspective. All three of his penalties were either offsides or NZIs. Didn't have a single first down created by those. And more importantly, you look at this, he dropped the quarterback, put the quarterback on the ground a lot with 12 and a half sacks and the quarterback hits he had. He didn't have a single roughing the passer call. That's a heady, savvy player not hitting the quarterback late, which is tough. I mean, you know, players want to knock the quarterback down. It's the objective of pass rushers. And sometimes there's a gain from it. And sometimes you want to take the one that might be on the edge just because you really need to knock the quarterback down and potentially make him feel very uncomfortable or even hurt him. Mm-hmm. But didn't do that the whole year.
Yeah, that's a pretty wild stat for a Ravens defender, period. especially somebody that's on the defensive line, that front seven. Props to Kyle Van Noy for really having that awareness about him and understanding what the refs are going to call and what they're not going to call.
Yeah, I agree. It's a big deal. And, you know, I was a little bit surprised by who I think Kyle Van Noy is as a leader, hearing him at the podium. For a couple of things. First of all, he's at the podium, and I've told the story a couple of times, so people will know it by now, but he's a stand-up comedian in the offseason, or he does a fair amount of stand-up as a hobby, let's put it that way. And when he gets the podium, you see that in him, because he's working the group of reporters there. And, you know, he's making jokes with them, kind of making fun of them as they're there. It can be pretty funny at times. But he's naturally got a, hey, you over there, kind of, he's got this kind of way about him. I don't know how relatable that particular routine is to other players, but my guess is fairly relatable because, you know, Van Noy, while an old guy to some players, is still a relatively young man at 33, who I think, you know, people would look up to kind of naturally. But he definitely, I asked him specifically about Joe Evans' first game where he had to play a ton of snaps. And he said, you know, he didn't want to go over and get in the head of a player like that unless he was asked. And this is another side of this. Maybe you want to just encourage the player who's having to be out there at, you know, basically because you're not having to be out there and say, hey, you're doing great here. This is really good. Or maybe say one thing to him. And he said, no, I don't really want to say, I asked him the question, obviously in a different format than that. He said, I didn't want to really get in somebody's head unless I'm asked. You know, then that's the time. He's a player, I think, really, Harbaugh should ask maybe to be a more direct leader with some of the other players that are there. Tavius Robinson, Ajabo could probably both learn a lot from him. Adisa Isaac, you know, there are some young guys there that need of a leader. The Ravens announced a whole bunch of captains on defense and special teams and offense, and he's not one of them. And I thought that, you know, if you got a guy with that kind of personality anyway, obviously very outgoing, probably very relatable with players. I would want more of that from him.
For sure. You know, without being inside the building, I don't really know the ins and outs of it. I would really guess strongly that he kind of is probably at that second tier. He didn't get a captain's patch, but he was with the team last year. He's warmed up. He's, you know, been in the locker room. He is a veteran. I have a hard time believing that he isn't really coaching those guys up or, you know, being supportive of, you know, Tavius Robinson and Adafi Owing, kind of taking those guys under his wing when he is the oldest one in the room. So, I don't
hope that's true,
but I'm pretty sure that's true, but I don't know.
One way we did see it's leadership by example. It's not really leadership. It's leadership by example. He blew an assignment in coverage, and Trenton Simpson ran over to him and basically was screaming at him about the thing. And Trenton was probably slightly over emoting in the case, but Trenton is also a 23-year-old and he's a 33-year-old. He basically told, you know, it's obviously gesticulating to Van Noy that he messed it up. Van Noy's back is the camera, but you can tell from his body language and the way he moved his hands that he knew it was his fault. He said so. Simpson immediately shut up. It was just a teaching moment in accountability in terms of exactly what you want. You want a veteran player who can be accountable to even a younger player. And if he can be accountable to Trenton Simpson, who's making all sorts of mistakes himself, he can be accountable to anyone.
Right.
And you also want somebody who immediately admits it, you know, and in Simpson's case, he shut up as soon as Van Noy said, yep, my bad kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a good moment all the way around.
Yeah, completely agree.
All right, how about we talk about Adafi Owe a little bit? You start off.
Man, he took another step forward, which is really good. EDC picked up the fifth-year option prior to the 2024 season. It seemed like a no-brainer for a lot of fans. I think some people were, you know, still frustrated with the production level we were getting out of a first round pass rusher. But Owe, you know, came, you know, finished the season with 10 sacks in the regular season. Really strong number. His athleticism shows up time and time again as one of those guys that can track down an athletic quarterback when a play breaks down. And that is, it's probably going to be close to the bare minimum you're asking for athletes in that in the next 5 to 10 years in the NFL. I think that's really more of the prototype. You need edge rushers to have that sort of athleticism, and the Ravens got one clearly from his testing numbers and stuff from Penn State. So
is that a function of more mobile quarterbacks in the league?
Yes. I think quarterback play is, you know, trending in the direction of Lamar Jackson, who, you know, he's phenomenal. We're not talking about quarterback, but, you know, we definitely would sing his praises. So, yeah, I think more and more quarterbacks coming into the league are going to have that ability to extend plays, scramble and do some things. And you're going to see less and less pure pocket passers. So that's kind of where I'm coming from there with Adafe Owe. His games lined up pretty similarly to Kyle Van Noy in the ones that I thought were his best. He played really well, actually, in the game in Pittsburgh, which was different. He had 5 pressures, 2.5 sacks, 0 missed tackles, 5 combination tackles, and there was 1 catch completed on him for 0 yards. Mm-hmm. So he had a really solid game. Unfortunately, the Ravens lost that one. It was close. And then he played well in Vegas, another loss. In week 4 against Buffalo, the whole defense played well. And then also week 17 in Houston, he had 2 pressures, a sack, no missed tackles, and 1 you know, combo. His worst games, I thought, in Cincinnati, not great. And then also the Philadelphia game. If you're talking about a pass rusher, and I should have noticed this with Van Noy too, I didn't really pay too much attention, but the O-line with the Eagles is just so strong. You're probably going to have a difficult game against them. And I think OA struggled a little bit against Philadelphia as well, but he didn't have a ton of terrible games. I just mentioned those two. Cincinnati there, you know, the score was big in both the Ravens Bengals games, mm-hmm. and then the game against the Eagles as well. But he graded out pretty well with PFF, 31st out of 119 edge rushers in his overall grade. The one most fans care about, the pass rush grade, was tied with KBN, 25th out of 109. Run defense was better than average, 48 out of 115. And then the coverage grade was too small of a sample size. But I think he has the athleticism to do it. It's really a matter of if Zach Orr wants to put Owe in the position to cover instead of attack the quarterback.
Well, that's certainly true. And he plays on the rush side, so he's not usually – he doesn't have an obvious responsibility on that side. Right. It doesn't mean you can't drop him and blitz somebody else. Sure. You've got – certainly those plays will come up. I had a few notes on him from this year. Very similar to Van Noy, had a massive turnaround as a finisher. He went from 26% quarterback hits plus sacks divided by his pressures as a percentage of his pressures to 50% in 2024. It's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a big red down arrow for this next year. But hopefully his aggregate pressure improves, mm-hmm. and his finish rate doesn't drop too much. You know, right. So if they had a 35% finish rate and with more pressures, maybe get to a similar level of sacks. Still has that great spin move. Loving to see that on both sides, because it's one of the issues was that Owe would go pretty quickly slow out of his stance and primarily to the bull rush in his first mm-hmm. couple of years in the league. And Chuck Smith definitely has made progress with him. I mean, no doubt about it. These last 2 years, he's looked a lot better. He did have a edge group best 5.6 yards per pass play when he was in there, which is good. I always look at the player who does the best when he's in the game, and the team is worse off without him as being a pretty good indication. 6% of pass rush snaps that he dropped to cover. What else do I want to say? You said about his run defense being solid. Mm-hmm. this unusual, but he's the most extreme player on the Ravens of the edges anyway, in terms of percentage of plays that are run plays. So he's really a pass rush specialist because he only plays about 24% of the time when the other team runs. And that's a function primarily of down and distance and passing situation. He's coming in on those right. downs, and he's out on early downs for players like Tavius Robinson, who can handle that job and keep him fresh. Did not have a great missed tackle rate at 15.2%. His career has generally not been very good either at 16.1%. It's not the strongest part of his game. Every single mm-hmm. edge the Ravens ever draft, and I mean everyone, the Ravens talk after the draft about how the floor on this guy is going to be how good a run defender he is, because this is a great run defender we're observing. And mm-hmm. it turns out these guys are not necessarily great run defenders. And certainly, I don't think that's the case with Owe. I don't think that's the case with and I doesn't mean he's not serviceable. Mm-hmm. The guy who's not serviceable is Ajabo. Makes lots of mistakes. We'll get to him in a minute. Courtney Upshaw, they said he was a great run defender. So at a minimum, we'll have that. Well, you know, Courtney Upshaw had a lot of problems in general on the field and keeping his head kind of clear. Had more personal fouls in his career with the Ravens mm-hmm. than he had sacks. So that's not yeah. a good that's not a good relationship there. So anyway, a way of some good, some bad, and some not sustainable, unfortunately. Really hope he takes another big step forward. I do not anticipate the Ravens extending him, because I doubt they'll be able to come to an agreement on money. In the case of somebody like Washington or Falele, I think they can do it because the guy's a mid-range player and there's mm-hmm. a lot of risk on the table for both of those players. In the case of a good player who doesn't have great stats, like a Travis Jones, I think they might be able to do it. Still probably a limited chance, but I think they might be able to do it. The two guys on the Ravens who I think they're going to have more trouble doing, because I don't think they're as good as kind of their reputation or their flashy stat number is, the first is Owe, and the second one, unfortunately, is Linderbaum. I think the rest of the NFL thinks he's a lot better than he is based on his Pro Bowls, when he's had a bad pass blocking year, a very good pass blocking year, and then dropped again to an average pass blocking year in his three. There's nothing to get that excited about, unless you're looking at PFF and you buy into the way they mix run and right. pass, blocking, and they don't weight it properly. They also mm-hmm. don't weight penalties properly, and he had a ton of those this last year.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know who his agent is. I don't know if you know the ins and outs of that, whether that is somebody that the Ravens deal with often or if it's somebody that they haven't and they struggle to get things done. I think it would be beneficial for them, for the team, to be able to get, you know, a moderate deal done with Owe, but I certainly can see why it wouldn't happen. You know, a 10 sack year, you're about to play on your fifth year option. You think, you know, as the agent and as the player, you might be able to improve and really, you know, hit it out of the park with some dollars, either in free agency or the Ravens are going to have to pony up. So, yeah, I understand the reasons why not. I just kind of wonder the agent that is representing Owe and kind of that, you know, conflict there.
I don't know the guy's name, but Cornrich is the guy's name. And Tyler Linderbaum's agent. I'm sorry. I think that's Owe is Jared Fox and Cornrich is Linderbaum's agent.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Linderbaum does seem like a tougher situation than Owe to me. But it really is. It's difficult because Linderbaum's a center, always a pass rusher. He's an edge rusher. Those guys are going to get paid more generally than interior offensive linemen, especially centers. It's a tough one.
The flip side of that coin is that Linderbaum, because he has to be offered the fifth year option this year, and it'll be based on multiple Pro Bowls and left tackle money effectively, because all the right. offensive linemen are thrown together. They got to fix that. They have got to fix that.
They really, I don't understand why they don't do a separate one for each position. Yeah. They probably do one for interior offensive line. That still is not correct. I really think they should have one for centers, one for guards, one for tackles, but that's besides the point. Even if they could do interior offensive line versus tackles, it would help. Do you think that completely prevents the Ravens from adding the fifth year option, even as a means to extend? Because then it puts leverage in Linderbaum's
once,
camp.
Once they give it to him, they've given it to him. So it's an enormous amount of leverage in terms of signing for Linderbaum's camp. And also, if let's say Linderbaum were to get hurt, he might be looking for a 1 year prove it deal, but he's got a 50-year option he can cash in on, you know. So they can't do it. They didn't do it for Patrick Queen, and it was the correct move, and it's been proven so this year with Queen's really lousy year with the Steelers. That he was a good guy to allow to walk. In Linderbaum's case, I don't think that's necessarily true. I think he could be a good long-term Raven. I think he could be in the Ravens' Ring of Honor if he signed his second contract here. But it's now or never. This is between now and the end of this season is going to be the time.
What about franchise tag? Because I don't think they do the franchise tag the same way that they do.
They do.
It's still tackle related.
Yep.
Darn. I thought
centers cannot be franchised effectively.
Darn. Yeah. For whatever reason, I thought that they did it differently.
Think also it might be true that once you pass on the fifth year option, you can't franchise the guy either. I'm not 100% sure about that, but Jackson, they obviously franchised after they'd already gone through the process of having him play on the fifth year option.
I got you. Yeah.
It doesn't seem right that you would be allowed to do that.
Right. Yeah. It definitely seems like a kind of a bargaining chip of the NFLPA to kind of put that tension in there. Anything else on Owe?
No, I think we move on to Tavius Robinson a little bit. I'll start on Tavius since I thought he had broadly improved play. Had a solid rookie year, played a lot of snaps. So 30% or so of the snaps as a rookie is always a fine place to start. And when rookies can't get on the field, it's a big negative in terms of this. So we're fortunate that we had a couple guys in Rosengarten and Wiggins who had big years as rookies this year. And even Rosengarten, if you believe, is maybe a C-plus season, a B-minus season kind of thing. That's unbelievably good for a rookie to start with playing time and play at a league average or slightly above level in terms of what his growth is. That's where Linderbaum started. So, he has a good potential future. And I think Tavius is in a similar spot. He played 28.6% as a rookie, and he's up to 42.4% in year two. And a lot of that was trying to keep Owe and Van Noy fresh, as we mentioned.
Yeah, completely agree with that. I had a number of games where I thought he played pretty well. Denver was a great game for the whole team. We kind of blew Denver out. He had 4 pressures, 2 sacks, 0 missed tackles, which is always a good thing to see, and 3 combination tackles. Week 8 at Cleveland, he had 3 pressures, a half sack, 0 missed tackles, 3 combos. That was a game that we lost, I believe. That was the one in Cleveland. And then week 5 at Cincinnati, he had 1 pressure, 1 sack, 0 missed tackles, and 3 combination tackles. And his worst game was at Houston. This is not necessarily like a bad game for him, but it was just like a decently high. I think he had roughly 20 total snaps on defense. 0 pressure, 0 sacks, 0 missed tackles, 0 combos. So he just didn't really do anything in that game positive. And that was also a game that the Ravens, pretty much blew out Houston. So you would want it to be stronger than that in a game that he got that many snaps. Go ahead.
So primarily an early down run defender. There's one number that stands out over the season as a really hot one, is that inside linebackers, you probably hear me use this more as the strikeout to walk ratio, is stops, which is defensive wins, tackles for defensive wins, divided by missed tackles. He only had 1 missed tackle the whole season in 28 or something tackles. 3.4% was his missed tackle rate. And at 13 stops on the season. That's great any way you cut it. That basically made Deshaun Elliott's year fantastic. He had basically double that in both numbers. On the back end, Tavius is a pretty solid edge defender. You mentioned that he didn't necessarily grade that well. I think he needs to deny space a little better. I think he needs to not get, I think he probably does get tricked out of his gap a little bit less because he's just not pass rush focused on the downs he's in there for. And I think that, you know, occasionally he does get trapped inside, which you really don't like, but it does happen occasionally. Just say overall, we saw, I think, a number of flashes of good play. I'd add screen recognition to that as well. I thought was pretty good this year.
Yep, completely agree. I feel like he is, you mentioned the missed tackle thing. He is really sound at tackling. He doesn't miss them. He wraps up extremely well.
Yep.
His role on defense is primarily to be an edge setter, kind of like Malik Harrison on the other side. And I feel like he does.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Ravens. So head to mood.com/Ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Very solid job of that. I can get into PFF grades. I do think that they are a little bit inaccurate here. It's not necessarily what I saw. His overall grade was a 62, which I think is about average in their system. In the 60s is pretty normal.
There's a regression to 60 that occurs if you don't have a lot of snaps. So think of it as above 60 is making a positive contribution. And if he makes several games of that sort of contribution, his grade would be even higher than that. So if he had like 10 straight games at a 63, his overall grade would probably be 75 or something. So you'd notice it if you saw it there. And it was much more apparent when PFF usually gave you the underneath scoring by play. They never gave us the by play scoring, but they gave us the by game scoring. And, you know, somebody be a +2 or a -2 for a game. And then occasionally they might have a +6, or if you're Patrick Queen, you have a -6 stuck in there. Mm-hmm. And you understand why it takes so long to dig yourself out of a hole like that.
Right.
When you do it.
His run defense grade, was a little bit lower than his overall. He had a 58.3 run defense grade, which is still about the midpoint of the edge defenders. 68th out of 115. You know, it's worse than the midpoint, but still not bad. Pass rush grade, 54. And his coverage was an 85.2. I think a lot of that is probably due to screen recognition.
Yeah, small sample size.
And a very small sample size, which is why he couldn't be ranked. It was 18 coverage snaps is what PFF had him at. I think he had a really solid season. I think his run defense is better than a 58.3. And I think his pass rush popped a good bit more than 54% or 54, you know, grade overall. But I like the player. I'm interested to see what this upcoming year is going to look like for him. And at the same time, I expect the Ravens to add some edge rush talent in the draft and possibly in free agency.
So just give you an idea how he ran. Something's been going on at PFF that is really strange is that they have a tackle standard that I believe looks back multiple years, and the tackle standard has been getting more difficult. So it ends up a lot of the current players end up scoring below 60 for the season. And I think that'll even itself out if you give it about 5 years. But for right now, it's not evening itself out. So Tavius Robinson at edge was the 14th best tackler of all the guys who played at least 20% of snaps at edge. And that's 14th of 135. So he's basically at about the 90th percentile of all of them. And, you know, that's fantastic. That's exactly what you want. The one thing that I see, you know, characteristically or trait-wise from him is he's often unblocked on the backside of a zone block to the right. And then his job is containment. You chase and clean up the trash at the line of scrimmage. And you better contain well enough to not allow some sort of a reverse, mm-hmm. not allow the quarterback to sneak out with the football the way, you know, they will on zone block right, naked boot left, where he would right. he would be on that side probably. So his first responsibility is that. But then he's got to chase down that play and try and make sure that he attacks that cutback lane when the running back takes it. And I thought he's been very good at that. I thought we've seen very good chase play. And when the Ravens in some way amoeba-eyes that offensive line to be something that it slows the running back up in any way, then Tavius Robinson there is right there to make the scoop. And like you said, very, very good form tackler. I really appreciate that about him.
For sure.
All right, let's move on and talk about Malik Harrison a little bit. He's still playing a combo inside-outside role. 34.6% of the snaps split between those, with about 40% of those snaps coming at outside linebacker. So if you do some little math on that, he's playing about 14% of the time of all defensive snaps at outside linebacker and about 21% of the time at inside linebacker in 2024.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. You know, he came in and played really well against the Chargers this year. That was kind of in my best games category for him in week 12. I think that was when Roquan missed some time.
Yeah, that might be.
Somebody, I feel like someone missed time at inside linebacker. Maybe he took over in that game because the Chargers wanted to run the ball. They got Greg Roman, J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards. It could have been the Trenton Simpson absence at that point of the season. Certainly in week 12. Zero pressure, zero sacks, one missed tackle, but he had 13 combo tackles. A lot of solos in there, a number of assists. And there were three catches on four targets for 21 yards, which is not, you know, not bad. Seven yards per reception and less than that when you get into targets. So a really solid game from him there. In really what his primary position on the Ravens is the edge, like we talked about with Tavius Robinson, is locking in on early downs, making sure that offenses can't beat you to the outside, containing that the outside run, and you know, collapsing that that pocket in the gap there as well on the outside. So I feel like he did a good job all season. And I don't see a reason why he's not back in 2025 and kind of going forward as a special teamer and a role player.
Okay, I'm going to offer a slightly different side of that coin because I think Malik Harrison probably needs to be not a part of any basic or regular defensive game plan. I think he mm-hmm. needs to be a special teams player where he's pretty good, but he's got some deficits you just can't live with on defense that I've had some problems with. So to give you a little background on this, Trenton Simpson was the starting weak side linebacker to start the year, of course. Then they went to a couple games where they kept Trenton Simpson in, but they went to a dime defense on passing downs, which takes away, you know, even if they did it only on 30% of downs, which might be about right, then you might take away half of the player's responsibility because those are the most important high leverage downs that you really need performance in. So you're not really taking advantage of your player. And that's okay because two down players have real value in this league and getting a safety in there on third down is something, if you've listened to this show for a while, you know how much I love it. But anyway, they then went after they were forced basically to take Hamilton out of that role, move him to the back end was part of the issue there or use him elsewhere, period. They then decided, okay, we're not sure we're totally bought into the Trenton Simpson experience. And they had Chris Board and he and Malik Harrison some rotating series with him, but it was a lot of Board initially. And so they were just offering alternating series, but that alternating series is a scary circumstance because it tells you that they're basically saying they don't really like the incumbent. And they want it to be a positional struggle where these guys each have a chance to show their characteristics in the broadest set of down and distance and passing and running situations to try and decide who they want. Well, anyway, after 2-3 weeks of that, Trenton Simpson was out. And they went to strictly a rotation between Harrison and Board. And it got complicated because Board, where maybe isn't the ideal guy to have on the field in, on rundowns, was somebody they had to on rundowns when Harrison was at the line of scrimmage playing outside linebacker. So they had to do some things that were a little bit funny. But Harrison, getting back to him, because he's really the problem here, had a very high missed tackle rate for an inside linebacker, way higher than what's acceptable, 22.2%. If you look at the PFF missed tackle grades, I've told you, some of these are probably a little high, but I trust the relativity of these things. Okay, understand? So I'm saying they're using a harsh standard on everybody, so I don't have to. Doesn't bother me the what the how red or orange the number is in some of these cases. But Harrison was 89th out of 92 inside linebackers that played 20% or more of the snaps. So, and that's 20% or more of the most snaps. I always feel compelled to explain that just because I hate the. Hate the definition they use, but it's if he had the fourth worst tackling grade, and his missed tackle rate probably was similar in terms of how bad it was at 22.2%. I'm just going to reorder these for a second and see where he is. Yeah, he's got the second worst missed tackle rate of any inside linebacker, and even when you look at it, even Patrick Queen, who that's certainly not a strength of him. Queen was 66th out of 92. By comparison in terms of his missed tackle rate. So a very tough year for Harrison, the tackler.
Yeah, I think when you're talking about Harrison, the player, and you're trying to, dissect each and every thing that he does and the responsibilities, you need to understand that he is a real negative in pass coverage. And kind of like a Brandon Stevens effect this year, where if the offense is out there and they see Malik Harrison at inside linebacker, they know they can put a slot receiver on him or an athletic tight end on him, and they have a matchup advantage automatically. That, I think, is probably a large portion of his missed tackles. I could be wrong there. It could be at the edge. It could be, purely as an off-ball linebacker. I'd have to go through each and every game and kind of dissect it further to know exactly where those came. But definitely, I think, just from a broad strokes perspective, watching these games, he is a liability in coverage. And when you see him against a more athletic player, he's going to be a problem out there. What he can do at the line of scrimmage and on the edge to, set the defense is solid, but I think he probably just became more of a negative being out there in the defense when the offense knows that they can kind of pick on him.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, he was 14.5 yards per target. How about I just leave it at that and say that's not acceptable no matter who you are. And it was I don't know how many targets it was.
All-pro season for any quarterback.
Yes. Yeah. It'd be more than an all-pro season. But it's not 14.5 for reception. It's 14.5 per target. So that's awful. Now, what he does give you, he's a four-unit core special teams player. Fits the Albert McClellan mold in terms of being a long-term Raven. And that's kind of where I projected him to be. The Ravens asked him to do a lot this year, and I think they asked him to do too much. I think the Ravens, one of the really hidden needs on this team is getting an inside linebacker that they can trust, whether that means reestablishing who Trenton Simpson is as a player in year three, giving Board some specific responsibilities, going to a committee approach, which is still possible, that they could have a early down guy that may not be on the team right now, but a guy who's a really good tackler who plays on first down. And Thumper. Harrison actually has a size to do. He just isn't a very good tackler. And then a Board could be your second down guy, a second and medium to long. And then you bring in a dime on obvious passing situations or when the other team's end of half, end of game, they're trying to come back, and you have that safety, you can do it. They didn't have enough safeties on the field to take away these snaps from Board, and it wasn't really as much Harrison's snaps to take, but to take them away from Board. In this last season, and that really hurt. So anyway, I hope they one of the position groups that will take the pressure off of the inside linebacker group is just having a better safety core that they can play. And you probably saw, but they hired Tyler Santucci, right? Tyler Santucci, I think.
Yes, Yes. I can check.
Yeah, he comes in 36, 37 years old. He turns 37 this year. And he has a background as a defensive coordinator, both Texas A&M, where he's like a co-coordinator, and at Duke, where they led the ACC in scoring. So that's a, you know, a nice background. He's always kind of had his hand in the pot with linebackers wherever he's coached in his tenure so far. Very fast, 1 and 2 years everywhere, which all the good coaches, that's what they're doing to advance their careers. They got to move every 2 years. Mm-hmm. And so it'd be interesting to see. He could be a dynasty hire that they're really looking to build their succession around. We'll see how good he is when he gets here, how effective he is at the NFL level. But this is a good thing. And I think it's potentially a good deal for players like Simpson and Board at that inside linebacker spot.
For sure. Yeah. You were correct about the name Tyler Santucci. He was at Georgia Tech this past year, was with Duke before. Apparently he was with Texas A&M as well, working with who's the pass rusher that was at Senior Bowl doing really well. Shamar.
Oh, yeah.
I should know. Yep. Shamar Thomas or something like that. I'm going to get it wrong. I haven't gotten into to all the pass rushers yet, but it's on my to-do list. Anyways, at Georgia Tech this year as the defensive coordinator, he did really well. He makes competitive games, and anytime that you see a rivalry game in college football, it's going to be competitive, even if the teams are at two different ends of the spectrum. But Georgia Tech was a heck of a game, even if you don't like the two teams. It was crazy, like about 7-8 overtimes this year. Great. So, yeah, definitely props to him, making it difficult on a, superior roster in Athens, making that game really close. And, Georgia Tech definitely could have won that one. So I'm interested to see what he can do with the defense, and especially with the development of the linebackers.
We'll go a little more quickly on these last three. David Ajabo, and we're back on edge again. We talked a lot about a lot of inside linebacker here, but David Ajabo is entering the final year of his rookie year. He still hasn't made an impact. I don't have anything truly positive to say about his third season. He is just not really doing it. I think one of the things that really shows up, and I hate to say this because he came to the Ravens as kind of like a physical freak, maybe a little bit ahead, in terms of his athleticism as a pass rusher, but needed to learn a lot to become better. But honestly, the guy I've seen is just not that kind of a cut athlete. I mean, we see that in a lot of the NFL. There's just a much higher level of athlete than David Ajabo.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much. I don't know the reason why it hasn't translated. Obviously, he's dealt with injuries. That has to play a part in it. But certainly, he was on Dane Brugler's freak list. Or is that the guy? I think it is.
Who writes The Beast?
Right. Coming out of college in Michigan, he tore his ACL. Was it his ACL or Achilles in the pro day at Michigan? And then the Ravens were able to draft him in the second round. Or they did draft him in the second round. I don't know if we want to say we're able to at this point. I think oddly enough, his best game might've been week one against Kansas City, a game that the Ravens, lost by maybe the biggest margin of all the games this year, which was a 7-point game.
Yeah, I mean they might have lost a game by 8. They didn't lose any game by 2 scores. So
correct. Yeah, none of the games were by 2 scores. I think Philly was the game that felt the most like a loss.
Right, and that ended up being a 5-point loss. So yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it might have been the biggest loss. 2 pressures, 1 sack, 0 missed tackles, and 1 combination tackle. Against Kansas City, which is interesting. It happened right at the beginning of the season. You think, okay, maybe, he's going to come in and do a little bit this season. You contribute. The next best game I had for him was week 15 against the New York Giants, mm-hmm. in a game that the Ravens were expected to and did blow out the New York Giants. He had 1 pressure, 1 sack, 0 missed tackles, and 2 combination tackles. And his worst game was against Houston in week 17, with a nothing, 0 pressures, 0 sacks, 0 missed tackles, 0 combinations in a 20 snap effort there.
it's a good chance to get Oliver Stroud in that game because he was obviously very nervous. I'll tell you something that bothers me more, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on Ajabo. He's a healthy scratch at midseason on 4 or 5 weeks. And a couple of those weeks, it was because they had Yannick Ngakoue and they want to plug him in. That's bad for starters. If the team goes out and has to get Yannick Ngakoue because you're not doing your job effectively, that's really not a good thing. And another couple of weeks, he was replaced by Adisa Isaac, who gave the team special teams value. So, you know, I want to see Adisa Isaac play. I want to see where he was. You know, I talked a lot about, you know, the relative importance of seeing who Adisa Isaac was much more important than seeing who Ajabo was in year three. Mm-hmm. Just get him on the field, see what we can do. And he didn't really get on the field very much the entire season, which was unfortunate. But it means the Ravens don't know as much about their need at edge going into this draft. Now, they know it's very high because their other guys are either old or potentially leaving, but they don't really know exactly how bad their need is because they don't know much, really anything about Adisa Isaac.
Right. Yeah, I completely agree. PFF did not grade him favorably. He was below average in everything. 52.9 overall, 58.6 in run defense, which was his highest grade, but small sample size. 55.7 pass rush grade and a 44.3 coverage grade, which was another small sample, 21 snaps. Not much positive to say there. You know, I felt like he got washed out of a lot of plays. You really think that his athleticism from Michigan would translate at some point and he'd be over these injuries and really kind of pop, but Adafe Owe and him are not on the same planet in terms of athleticism. And they were coming into the draft where Ajabo was, you know, being drafted. They were really compared in a similar light. I think Owe was a little bit freakier athlete and Ajabo was like kind of right below him. And it's not even close.
Obviously,
injuries play a factor in that. But it's kind of at this point, I don't know what to really say about it.
Fair chance that he'll be either traded or cut at the end of this training camp. Now, I don't anticipate he'll have a lot of trade value, but sometimes you get each team has a player, or sometimes you just have to do it for a conditional seventh round pick, which might be the price. He's an edge rusher. Maybe you get an actual seventh. Maybe you get a conditional six for a seven kind of thing. There's a few different combinations that could work out. If you're an offensive tackle, you'd hope to get a sixth round pick for him. But as a edge rusher, he's probably not worth that. And a lot of teams now, seeing the Ravens and how they've done it, would probably rather go out and get, you know, Jadeveon Clowney if he's on the street again, or just, I don't think he will be. I think he's actually signed for another year at Carolina, but some other older pass rusher who they think might work out.
Yeah, I do think depending on how many picks they allocate in the draft and what they do in free agency, he has a very good chance of not being on the roster at the start of the season. I'll just say that.
All right. Adisa Isaac played only 3% of the snaps as a rookie. Really, the problem started in camp. He was injured a lot. He got into PS2 against Atlanta, played 38 snaps in that game, had a flash and run defense, made some nice plays. I was very positive about where he was headed after that, but he also got hurt at the end of that game and didn't play the third game. And then he didn't, I don't know when he got his first snaps in the regular season, but it took a while. But the only nice thing I can say is when he was in there, he's playing 5 units of special teams. Now, 4 units, you're almost all the fast athletic players play 4-unit coverage and return on punt and kickoff, but he's a 5-unit guy because he also blocks field goals. So he's on that unit, and he played 46 total snaps of special teams in the games he was active. That's something. And you know, hopefully as he is not an edge that the Ravens are completely depending upon, at least he can be a guy who can provide some special teams value as he's hopefully still developing into a pass rusher that has some value.
Right. I would hope that 2025 is similar to Tavius Robinson's rookie year.
Okay.
For him.
That would be a big step forward, honestly, because he effectively redshirted this year from a defensive perspective.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on and talk about Yannick Ngakoue. itinerant situational pass rusher here. Mercenary is on the street to be signed just about any time. He joined the team for a 5-week stretch. I think he went to New England after. There's some the Ravens who get cut seem to go to New England, San Diego, the New York Jets, a few teams. But there's a 5-week stretch from 5 to 9 where the Ravens were absolutely at the nadir of their defensive pass or pass defense effectiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It was interesting that they brought him back this year, considering how it went last time. I thought it had potential to go a little bit better. It, you know, ultimately didn't lead to much of anything. Kind of interesting career for Ngakoue. You know, really solid, if not special player with Jacksonville early in his career with Calais Campbell and all those guys, Jalen Ramsey, so many defensive studs in Jacksonville, and just hasn't really turned out for him. But, you know, I thought it was at least a worthwhile attempt by Eric DaCosta. It didn't hurt the team. I don't think it hurt the team, but it didn't help him much either. It was just kind of a not much either way move.
Yeah, he's a guy who I thought could help the Ravens. He had 2 sacks last year. He only played 87 snaps. It was a contribution at a time the Ravens were really down. In particular, some of their interior rushers had been injured in that exact period. Travis Jones not really being effective. It's incredible to me. He's about to enter his 10th NFL season, maybe if he gets picked up by somebody. Mm-hmm. I assume he will be. And he's still not yet 30.
He will be
at some point, maybe this summer, but it's very weird. Mm-hmm. All right. So nobody else played the position for the Ravens. I don't think I missed anybody who I looked, and I don't believe there was another one. But let's talk about 2025 needs and then move on here. Sure. So the Ravens have Owe on a year 5 option. So like Linderbaum, it's mm-hmm. now or never to sign him. Presumably, okay, I want to say how I look at this.
Right.
Between now and the beginning of the season is a prime time to extend either of these guys. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be... You know, maybe between now and fifth year option, the declaration time is a prime time to sign Linderbaum. But for Owe, the decision's already been made. It's any time between now and basically the start of the regular season, maybe even the start of camp, I would say. Then starting at camp, he starts to accrue injury risk. And you can think of the injury risk as a bunch of sand in the hourglass that's on top to start with, where he's trying to work down that injury risk, play safely through the season so he can really cash in. For the one time and the most money he will ever make on an NFL deal will be the next one. It might be 4 years, $80 million. It might be a lot of things, but it's going to be a lot of his career earnings will be on this very next deal. He's got to minimize that injury risk. Well, the Ravens want to try and sign him at a slightly bargain rate. And to do so, they want to impress upon him the risk that he's got, and then also come to some sort of divisible benefit arrangement where instead of playing 4 years, $80 million, they pay or extend him for an extra 4 years and $70 million, say, on top of that to provide value. But this is the one chance they have basically before the regular season starts. Once it does start, risk is trickling away. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing from Owe's perspective. I wouldn't say it's a bad thing from the Ravens' perspective, but it doesn't help the negotiating position.
Right. Yeah. Man, you really have to think even further past 2025 to see what player or players would be in the running for a franchise tag in trade or franchise tag just in general, so that you can then extend from there. Owe might be one of those players. I don't think his value is there right now to play under the tag at that position. I think
so he'd have to have a huge year to make it franchisable after. Yeah, good point.
Correct. But I do think it would be an option for a tag and trade, considering that the team trading for him would have a deal in place and maybe his agent likes that team and they would have some sort of, you know, situation worked out. He probably will not play for whatever the tag is worth at any point in his career unless he completely goes off this year.
Yeah.
I think there is an option for him this season to sign something before, you know, before it really kicks off, like you're mentioning, but I'm not sure the likelihood. I would say it's probably less likely than it is likely at this point.
Oh yeah, much less likely that they get a long-term deal signed. The Ravens just have too much on their plate.
Yeah,
Edge is a real need, but they don't have too much. They have too much on their plate. They have to figure out Linderbaum. This is their one chance with Travis Jones. Their one chance with Isaiah Likely. They have to decide on Mark Andrews if they mm-hmm. you know, in a lot of ways that decision is probably a lot based on what they think they can get done with Likely, because it's two different players, two different costs. And it's which one is the better bargain to them is how the Ravens would have to be balancing that. But I think only one of them will be playing in Baltimore in 2026. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it's really an interesting offseason, even though Eric DaCosta kind of, you know,
poo-pooed it, didn't he?
Yeah, he said, oh, yeah, 2026 is going to be difficult. And this year we got everybody back. And there might be some truth to it, but the decisions are being made now, even if you don't see the outcome yet. It's quite an interesting and definitive season for what this roster makeup is going to look like going forward. Man, if they don't re-sign Oway, then they're talking about a completely new edge group essentially in 2026. And I think that puts a big onus on Eric DaCosta to draft somebody early in 2025, which is why I'm really excited to, you know, focus in on that position group and the defensive line this year.
All right. I'm looking forward to both, and we're looking forward to certainly talking draft contact with you, Jake, because you're one of the really good ones. I appreciate that. Van Noy is signed through 2025. They could, I suppose, extend him now. I think they probably are going to have to figure that out after 25. They don't want to defer a lot of decisions to then because they won't have any money. But also I wouldn't want to be stuck with an old maid contract with Van Noy. And they appear to just have gotten one with Pierce. Pierce was having his helmet signed by everybody after mm-hmm. the last right. game. And that certainly makes it look like he's retiring. If that's the case, the Ravens got stuck with the last year's deal, meaning they paid signing bonus for that year without actually getting him to play it at the salary value. And I'd have liked to have Pierce back on this defensive line. So I think he still had value. Mm-hmm. We've seen that happen with players like Reed and Mason.
Yanda.
And Yanda, those three.
Yeah.
As being guys who specifically you get stuck with. You don't really care that much if the guy's a Ring of Honor player. I do care in Michael Pierce's case. I think it's value lost, and he's a good player still. It's not like he's a player who it might be just on time to get rid of the guy. I think it's possible. It's true with Michael Pierce, but I see how they played without Michael Pierce this year, and it wasn't very well.
I'm curious about Reed. You said because after 2012, he left and played with the Texans, if I remember correctly.
So Reed signed a whole series of two to make 1 year deals at the end of his career.
And I'd have to go back. Him? Okay.
No, they just cut him.
I didn't know if they cut him or if he just left as a free agent, but they may have cut him.
Yeah, I think they actually cut him on the last time after the 2012 season when they needed the money for Flacco. They end up cutting him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Had to cut a lot of players then. It's okay. It was just in time with Ed Reed. Ed Reed, great player.
Yeah, but man,
11 years was the right number with the Ravens.
They made the right choice. It stinks for his legacy, but I mean, he's fine. He made multiple millions after, so it's all good.
You know, his whole Hall of Fame speech was hilarious. It was an overstatement in a lot of ways, but it's just very funny in terms of he said, you know, first of all, I just want to start with the Jets. Thanks for the $6 million or something, he said. and then Houston, thanks for the money as well. But there's no place like Baltimore kind of thing. I love that kind of thing. And then he talked about the Browns and I think it was the Browns and the Bengals and thanking them for the 30 picks. And I actually looked, it was like 22, but still a slight overstatement, but hilarious.
Yeah. That's funny.
And this is the kind of thing. If somebody says 30 picks and that, and he said, well, it was only 22. Oh, really? Like, 22 picks? It was only 22?
Yeah.
I love that. David Ajabo, I don't think fits into their plans beyond 25. May not fit into their plans for 25.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. It's not looking good for him, but it'll really depend on the whole training camp. I don't think they cut him before unless they're approached with a deal or Eric DaCosta seeks out a deal and is able to trade him. I don't think there's a reason to cut him prior to training camp necessarily.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think he'll ride it through the summer because he is signed for this right. year and then probably yeah. be cut. Harrison and Robinson hopefully playing at least similar workload. Hopefully they look at the bargain bin. I think we've hit on that enough. But regarding mm-hmm. the draft, I don't see this as a definitely need a first round pick here, but I do think it's one at the edge where your chance of hitting in a later round is much lower. And the yeah. Ravens have proven that those roster spots are really important, and they can't have two guys like a fourth and a sixth rounder that you're looking to develop because it's too much of your total roster space mm-hmm. allocated to developmental players at a position where you need guys to play.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. The Ravens have hit, especially under Ozzie Newsome, at later round prospects at the outside linebacker edge mm-hmm. position. DaCosta hasn't had quite as many, you know, shots on goal yet. I think he can get there, and he was a part of everything that Ozzie's been, you know, doing throughout his career. But I think that position especially is one that you have to take early shots to get a real difference maker at. You're lucky if you end up with a Za'Darius Smith in the fourth round, or I can't remember if he was fourth or third. I think he was fourth. Or a Matt Judon in the fifth round. You know, those are just special examples of late round steals. And I don't think they're common, even if you're talking about the specific organization that made those picks. So yeah, with Owe not being signed for the future and Kyle Van Noy being 33 plus, I think it's going to be really difficult for DaCosta to pass on a talented edge rusher if he's sitting there at pick 27 or, you know, in the second round.
Okay, here's what I'd like you to do. Play a little game with me. So sure. Looking ahead at the 2025 draft, how many edges do you think the Ravens will draft in total? Guys that project to the edge, and obviously you can have tweeners and whatnot that fall into this. But I think there's only really three yeah. possibilities, 0, 1, or 2, but we'll make 2 into 2+.
Right. I think it's 2.
You think it's 2. Okay, so a 0, what percentage chance would you give that?
5%?
5 is exactly what I said. 1?
35%.
Okay, 35%. I said 65%. So you've got them at 60% to draft 2.
I really strongly, with 11 picks right now, and DaCosta loves his picks, I think they're going to at least get 2. I do think 3 is a little bit overboard, so I think the exact number is 2.
Okay. I would say the exact number is 1 or 2. I think it's more likely to be 1 than 2 still, but there's just a limit to how many they can do. And if they're going to do what they've done typically, which is go bargain shopping, you really right. can only afford to have one more guy developmental. They've also already got a fairly limited edge in terms of Tavius Robinson. They want to work into the rotation, and they certainly hope he does more.
Yeah,
but he's fairly limited in terms of his basic thing. And then they've got Owe and Van Noy coming back, so
it's true.
It wouldn't help, you know, to get 3 guys wouldn't make any sense at all to me.
And if you're gonna have, it's a numbers game for sure. I think if you're talking about the guys that are in-house that are locks to make the roster, you do already have 3. And so, you know, if you draft 2 guys, one of them has to be an early pick.
Yep.
And then the other guy is a developmental player, but that means you're kicking Ajabo out the door most likely. And that also means any other UDFA, anything like that, any veteran free agent that you're bringing in, it's a real numbers crunch. So, yeah, I could see it as one player. It's just you're really pushing a numbers crunch on the roster in 2026. I mean, it not necessarily a numbers crunch, but you're making it a really difficult situation.
Yep.
Going into that season, if OA doesn't, you know, stay on the roster, if Kyle Van Noy retires, man, you're down two guys. Tavius Robinson, do you want him to be a starter for you? Adisa Isaac, did he develop in his second year? David Ojabo, did he make the roster? So, like, it's really challenging, all of those things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I completely agree. It's a very short-sighted move in a lot of ways to draft only one edge because you're kicking the can down the road. But on the other side, you got to be willing to really cut bait. And, you know, you might get into some really tough decisions. Like, you might have to cut Malik Harrison. Mm-hmm. If you, which, you know, it seems like he's a guy they want to invest in the qualified contract with him and create that additional friction that makes him a valuable long-term Raven. I don't see them getting two edges in there. They got much more defection, by the way, on the offensive line that's occurring this year, where four guys potentially could hit free agency mm-hmm. that they need. And then four game day actives they've had in Jones, McCary, Stanley, and Cleveland, even though they're not all starters. You know, it's a lot of the backup offensive line play on the O-line, as well as the left side, is heading out the door. And they're going to need to figure out how to get all those additional offensive linemen. I think the draft is a position where they might really take three offensive linemen this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought they were going to take about three last year, and they took two. They took Samak and Rosengarten.
Yep.
But I'm actually interested. Where are you at with Stanley? I know this podcast specifically is about edge, but what is your percentage of likelihood that Ronnie Stanley is back in Baltimore for at least 2025?
Right. Well, he's the Jupiter in this solar system of decisions. You know, you really have to figure that out before you figure out anything else. I think they'll make him an offer to take to the market. Mm-hmm. I think it will be at least competitive. If there's any hint of a bidding war for him, or two or three teams have interest other than the Ravens, I think they've lost him. Unless it'll be Ronnie's decision to come back for less to Baltimore, but I don't think that the Ravens can go to the top of the market to pay Ronnie Stanley with all of the contractual needs they have coming to bear.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I saw something earlier on Twitter about it, over 20 million per year, which, or 21, I think that is probably fair value for him on the market. I would rather see an offer like 17 and a half or 18 plus, with incentives that could get him to 23 million, maybe 24.
That really kicks the can down the road. Those bonuses are paid the year after each of those contract years, but you could structure something like that.
I would probably do a 2 to 3 year deal with him. Certainly not just a 1 year extension. But I don't know. I think it's a challenging situation that the Ravens are in. Do they believe Rosengarten is a good plug and play left tackle and they can just focus on right tackle in the draft? I don't know.
Yeah. It's definitely a very difficult decision, and they've got to re-sign one of Jones or McCary to start that thing. McCary's going to be very expensive, I'm afraid, but they'll have to sign. That means they're going to have to try and sign Josh Jones, who doesn't really have any record of stellar play. That's why the Ravens were able to get him this time around, but still might be a guy who out there on the market, out there on the left tackle market, will cost a little.
I like Josh Jones to come back as a sixth offensive lineman because what I saw at the end of the year was really promising in the run blocking from him. Mm-hmm. I thought he was a valuable asset out there. I would not sign him with the money allocated saying, all right, you're going to be one of our starters. No, it shouldn't be starting money or even flirting with starting money for Josh Jones, but backup guard, backup, barely backup tackle money, but I think probably around $4 million type AAV for Josh Jones.
Three for 12 AAV ish of four. Yeah, I could live with that too. I think it's a substantial mid-range contract. It's what you might give Patrick Ricard or a little bit less than that, maybe for Ricard. So Ravens got a bunch of tough decisions, and they at some point they're just going to have to do what happens to the Ravens at all times is basically their drafting outpaces the cap dollars, the growth of the cap, and they have to let some really good players go. And it's going to hurt like hell when a player like Linderbaum or like Stanley or like Owe walks out the door because the Ravens just can't match the offer. It is what it is. All right, Josh, always a pleasure. I'm sorry, Josh, Jake, always a pleasure talking football with you. Tell folks where they can find you online.
Yeah, I am on Twitter or X at Real Jake Vogel, V-O-G-E-L. I'm talking Ravens football, Georgia football, as in the Bulldogs, and anything in between with college and NFL. So I'm really excited for draft season. It's really my favorite time of the year, to be honest. And, you know, right now with two girls at home, plus the wife, I don't have nearly as much time, but I'll be focusing in on the edge rushers and the defensive line. So look out for my thoughts on that, and feel free to comment and tweet at me or whatever.
All right. Make sure you include him on in conversations where you'd like to get a really good input on somebody who knows the draft very well. I always trust Jake in that regard. He's always on one of the positional shows, which will be coming up at the beginning of April. So looking forward to that. Other folks out there, hit me up with your Film City short ideas. Got more in the mail today. Really looking forward to record a number of these. And I'll put off the historical series for as long as I need to get through some of these ideas, because they look like they're really worth the time. Again, the narrower the topic, the better in terms of getting something done, because we're trying to provide something to be discussed in about 20 minutes or less. And so we're not looking to restructure everything about the Ravens draft process or anything like that. It's too beefy a topic. But anyway, we really appreciate the listens and thanks for being such loyal fans. Jake, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.